I don't see the thing. I mean, I really don't understand how you can be as impressed as others are about a film that is essentially a genre film that traffics in social satire and horror, and basically says the bottom line attitude is that there's a quietly benevolent, malicious attitude that the white elites have towards people of color, and that they're trying to co-opt them and make them into zombies and you know, recreate their personalities and their attitudes in the way they want. You know, so they're controlling the thing. So that's the basic metaphor, which is kind of a weird, malicious thing, because the same people who are loving Get Out are the same people who are depicted in the film as the malicious upper middle class people who are trying to manipulate people of color. It's really kind of a strange concept when you think about it.
Right, because its director, Jordan Peele, doesn't just go after, the white conservatives. The targets in the film are actually liberals.
That's what I'm saying. The liberals with money and with taste and who voted for Barack Obama twice and voted for him a third time if they could have, these are the bad guys. And it's this crowd that right now, their nephews, their sons, people in their group who are saying that Get Out is the movie of the year. We love it. It's you know, maybe it'll win. Who knows? It's that crowd. So, you know, does anything make sense in this whole thing to you? I'm not understanding any of it. It just really doesn't add up. It's not a substantial enough film. Although it is a very clever film, and I had a good time with it as far as it goes. I didn't love it, but I had an okay time with it. But to get on this bandstand, to get on this on these tanks and start firing up the engines, calling it the greatest of the year.
And again, you look at last year, and Moonlight was the critical darling, and we both thought it was a good but not great movie. But I mean, we were in the minority as well.
It is a good movie. It's not a great movie, but it won because of the politically woke attitude that, you know, the same thing that this guy today on Twitter was saying that, you know, basically it's a political choice and a woke choice to vote for Get Out. And it's the same thing that Ann Thompson said to Eric Cohn during that IndieWire podcast that went up on the 8th of December. To which I know that when I was filling out my Critics' Choice ballot, there were a couple of categories where I did lean into movies like Get Out and Mudbound. I wanted to make sure there were some people of color on my ballot. I did. And what I did was I made sure that the POC contenders were higher. I wanted them to make sure that they were recognized. And so as opposed to putting them in number four or number five or something like that. So Academy members are going to do the same thing. This is...
You know, Jeff, we're living in a very interesting time right now for film criticism. I find that the days when, even the days of the 90s, and even just 10 years ago, it was such a different spectrum. And now, critical theory and postmodernism have just snuck in, and you have to judge now any film you watch politically, and that's the way it's going right now. And I find it's very infuriating. Even though art should be political in a way, but what's going on right now is that, you know what? If Get Out came out 10 years ago, we would have totally forgotten about it by the end of the year. We would have not even remembered it.
Yeah.
That's what's really just maddening about this whole thing. Do I think Get Out is a good movie? Yes, it's a good movie. In fact, again, I said I had one hell of a time watching it with the audience that I did, but to go back, this website, CriticsTop10.com, says that it compiled over 500 critics' lists, and it's number one. It made over 276 lists.
Okay.
And
you mean it's women? 276 of the 500 critics have it at the top, or they have put it on their list?
Actually, it's 388 lists, but it's growing every day. 276 out of 388 critics.
Yes.
put Get Out in their top 10. And it...
Well, everybody has it in their top 10.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It's also topped the most lists. 46 lists have it at number one.
Mm-hmm.
No other movie has come close to that. So, but also, you raise a good point, because a lot of the people I speak to that just rave on about the movie are millennials.
Yeah.
And they tend to always connect it to the woke movement and
yeah.
to the current political climate.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeff, let's say we were, this was 2001 or 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no woke movement. There was no, you know, critical theory.
There was no Oscar So White that started this whole thing 2 years ago, et cetera. Yeah.
Chances are Call Me By Your Name and Dunkirk would have been the critical favorites.
Yeah.
I mean, those two movies were as cinematic and as artfully conceived as...
Yeah.
As you can get.
And probably the Post would probably have more heat, too. I mean, the Post is in there. I'm not saying it's dismissed, but it would have more heat because people were accustomed that time. That was the best picture criteria 10 years ago, 15 years ago, even 5 years ago, something like the Post. But now it's not the same because things have changed. There's a whole new wave of people in the Academy anyway that are... that don't think as the way the old fart Academy people do, and it's, you know, it's a changeover, which is good, which is fresh. And
so, yeah, but you know what? The Post is still very, very political, and it has a lot of there's a lot of similarities to today's political climate, mm-hmm. and it's an obvious analogy to the Trump administration's attacks on the press.
You know what I love about today's climate? If you don't subscribe and don't go along with the Get Out acolytes, they've got it in their heads. You're somehow cast in the shadows of being a regressive, of being a conservative, of being a Trump. You know, it's really revolting. It infuriates me that this system is in place now, because either you're with that crowd, and if you're not, there's something a little suspect about your sensibilities.
Hey, you know, last year I was called a racist, a conservative, just for saying that Moonlight didn't deserve Best Picture.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many times I was called that.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, it's just a movie.
Yeah.
It's a movie. And just because I thought it was good but not great doesn't merit, racist.
But that's the climate we're in. Either you're with the wokers, and if you're not woke, then you're in the way. And basically,
it's happening right now in film criticism. And, you know, I noticed that Todd McCarthy, who I've admired for years and years and years, did not put Moonlight in his top 10 list, and he did not put Get Out in his top 10 list.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And based on even talking to him a few times, he refuses to abide to these movements. So there's a critic that we can definitely cheer on.
Yeah, yeah. I really admire. I completely don't agree with what Todd was saying about I think he says, according to an ad at least, Alexander Payne's film, Downsizing, is the best film of the year. I don't think that's very correct. I don't think that's a very perceptive. But I admire someone who stands out and says something like that.
So. Yeah, Downsizing was a major disappointment. The first half is fascinating, but it really just dissolves in the second half into, I don't know what.
Yeah, yeah.
It becomes a whole other movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, you spoke about The Post. I actually have The Post winning Best Picture.
Okay.
I think it can win Best Picture.
Uh-huh.
Most people I've spoken to love The Post.
Okay.
And
When you say most people, you're speaking about people that, what, you interview, people in the industry? What do you...
I'm talking about general audience.
Okay.
It's really struck a chord with, the regular Joes, and what Spielberg has done is, yes, he's captured the current times we live in, but he's also made a movie. He's made a film that is cinematic and that, you know, was made to win Oscars.
Right.
And because I don't really think Get Out can win Best Picture, because there's just... It's not Best Picture material. That's the thing about Get Out. It's a genre film.
Yeah.
Films can't really win the big prize.
I think that the new wave of Academy people, and particularly the people in our group, the critics, they want to advance the notion that you don't have to have those classic standardized attributes or characteristics that Best Picture films have. They want to wipe all that away and be a little more freer in their choices. They would like to go back to 1956, which is one of the all-time embarrassments, won Best Picture, Around the World in 80 Days. They would like to be, you know, the people that say, no, the much more sage and sharp catching of where our culture is at is a movie called Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And they would be right, you know, because we understand that now. So I understand what people are doing. They're trying to say, you know, let's get rid of that old way of thinking about classic characteristics of a Best Picture film, and let's be open to genre films being a Best Picture. I understand what they're saying. It's not a bad idea, but it's not good enough.
No,
you know?
It isn't, but I think there's enough people that find Get Out overrated for it to just not be able to win Best Picture.
Yeah.
We're not in a minority here, I find. I find that there are enough people out there that will not vote for Get Out.
Okay.
When it comes time for Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
Like Dunkirk should be in the conversation, but I don't think it has much of a chance.
Because it doesn't have enough of an emotional arc. It's not enough of a character element in that film. It's more of a director's god's eye view of things, right?
Right, and Christopher Nolan is just not very lucky with the Academy.
Mm-hmm.
You have Call Me By Your Name, which I thought, when I saw it at Sundance and as the season went along, I thought it might possibly be the Best Picture frontrunner, but I don't know what happened.
I identified early on that there is a considerable resistance among older straight white guys, at least in this town. Just don't want to particularly go there. People like Paul Schrader recently said he finally saw it. He had an instinct not to see it. He was reluctant to see it. He didn't want to, and he just didn't like it. I think there's a basic thing about, straight white guys don't particularly want to dip into that swimming pool. And they feel that a gay film won last year and that's enough. You know, maybe something like that. Okay. All right.
That came out. He released his list, I think, 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And by the way, that's another movie that kind of,
Not a chance. It didn't even begin to get into my thinking as a worthwhile, really strong film. I thought it was a mistake, the way they focused on that horrible incident at the Algiers motel. I just thought it was. I wanted to be released and get out of that film, really. I just didn't understand why they felt that was the way to play it, but I thought it was a mistake. And clearly it was, in terms of, general audience reception, and the critical consensus wasn't much either. Can I ask you something? What about your wife's reaction to Lady Bird? What were her feelings about it?
She liked it. She didn't love it.
Okay. What didn't she love, or why was she cool about it?
Well, the thing about that she thought made Lady Bird just a good movie, not a great movie, was was the fact that it was really just a bunch of scenes that were 2 or 3 minutes long put together, and there wasn't much much plot in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was more just, you know, episodic in nature. She loved The Post. Yeah. That's her favorite movie of the year.
Okay. Well, do you? How about this? If you could say that last year, 16, was the year of renouncing and setting the record straight on Oscar So White, and that's not where we're coming from, and people wanted to. I think that's why. I think it was a close vote. I think that La La Land was probably very popular, but I think Moonlight edged it out because of this feeling that we have to address the Oscar So White thing, which is a stain on the culture of the Academy. So one could also say that 2017, I don't think this is an outlier view, is the year of the strong woman, of the pushback, the year of Me Too. So likely you could say, well, then it would be appropriate that the film about a woman would be the possible a leader in terms of the best picture. Greta Gerwig's film is looking pretty good in that regard, but I take it you don't think it's strong enough. I mean, some people think it is. What's your general?
Sorry. I really liked it. It's just the fact that Lady Bird is such a simple, beautiful sketch of, you know, a young woman growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that there were worthier choices for Best Picture this year.
Mm-hmm.
And Saoirse Ronan, who I interviewed a few months ago, she's just such a delight, and she maybe is my favorite female performance of the year in this movie.
I think she's looking pretty good for Best Actress. What about that? Do you have a general feeling about her being the Best Actress contender to beat, or what do you think?
Right now, it's between Hawkins, McDormand, and her.
Yeah.
I think.
Do you think there's any? Has Hawkins been out there much? I get the feeling she hasn't done a ton of interviews or.
Right? I haven't seen her that much. Mm-hmm. I really have not seen Sally Hawkins that much out there.
Okay.
Right now, I think that's the most fascinating category.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have three top-notch contenders there. And I think we were all saying, oh, Meryl Streep, Meryl Streep, Meryl Streep. And then the SAG nomination showed up and put a little damper on her parade. But,
The general consensus that I managed to put together is that the SAG thing is a kind of a degraded vote now because of the AFTRA people who joined SAG 4 or 5 years ago, and that they're not exactly the most cultured and educated people, and they're just like what they like. I don't think it means as much anymore. SAG.
Yeah, but it might mean that Meryl Streep doesn't win. She will probably get nominated. But my reasoning is, my thinking is, McDormand has already won.
Yeah.
So that's what makes me think that she might not win again.
Okay.
And Hawkins. It is basically, for me, the front runner. Which Saoirse Ronan as the dark horse could really up that.
Why is Sally Hawkins a front runner? I don't get that at all. I feel she's certainly one of the three, one of the three most likely. But where do you get front runner?
Well, because I find Frances McDormand is supposed to be the front runner, but I just can't see him winning again.
Okay.
And I think in second place is Sally Hawkins. So she takes the lead.
When you say winning again, you're talking about Fargo, right? Is that what she won for? Am I forgetting?
Yeah, Fargo.
That's 20 years ago. So why can't she?
I know.
It's not like she won 5 years ago or 7 years ago.
I know.
You know.
And she's great in Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri. She's fantastic in that movie.
Yeah.
In fact, there's been so many great female performances this year that the male acting category looks like a joke, a complete joke. You might even have Get Out's lead actor squeezing into the top five.
He's a good-looking guy. He did a good job. He really handled his part in Get Out very, very well. Daniel Kaluuya, we're talking about. But to seriously say that he's a best actor contender, I just have to shake my head and say, okay, man, if that's what you think. You know, it's not based in any understanding of really great acting that I have. But go to town if you want.
I mean, I currently don't have him as part of my top five, but I really have this sneaking suspicion he might get in.
He might.
And he might maybe steal Denzel or James Franco's nomination.
Wow.
Yeah.
I could see that conceivably happen with Denzel, because as really wonderful as he is in Roman J. Israel, the movie doesn't have any bounce. It had just never caught on, and unfortunately, you can be really good in a film, but the film itself has to have a heat on its own, or your campaign for this or that acting nomination is not going to work out. So it's really still, though, down to Oldman and Timothée Chalamet, and the narrative for most of the fall was Oldman has to be him, can't be anybody else, he's got the heat. And then Chalamet kind of surged along, particularly when the critics group started to vote. So where do you think that competition is happening? What's going on right now?
It's the new Oscars, where someone who delivers a fantastic performance as Winston Churchill might not win. And Gary Oldman, again, 10, 15 years ago, he would have been the front runner and he would have won.
Yeah.
But it's just a new mentality that the Oscars have post-Oscar so white. And, I don't mind that. I don't mind that Chalamet wins over Oldman. I think Chalamet's performance is better.
Yeah. You know that, of course, Oldman doesn't have... It's not about reaching down and being emotionally revelatory. It's not about... it's about a kind of performance that has done well before, as you say, and it's... I spotted it as a very broad performance aimed at the people in the balcony. There's a certain... certain cachet to delivering that kind of performance, but my first response is this is the kind of performance that could have been given in a film in 1987, and it would have done very well. And it's classic. It's a very standardized way of with the makeup and the eccentric mannerisms and the drinking whiskey in the bed and all that stuff. It's what people recognize in a certain light as being an Oscar level performance. But I thought Timothée was much sadder, much deeper, much more tender performance. It got me emotionally far more than anything Oldman did.
Yeah, I think Chalamet's performance is probably the best male acting I've seen this year.
Mm-hmm.
And before we saw Phantom Thread, then we were thinking, oh, this is Daniel Day-Lewis's last role, he's retiring, maybe he'll nab that fourth Oscar, but it's just not going to happen, because we saw the movie, and he actually doesn't give even the best performance in that movie.
The best performance is by who?
Vicky Creeps.
Oh, okay.
I think she outshines him. And you know what? He still deserves a nomination. He's fantastic in the movie, but I think she outdoes him here. So
it's funny. My favorite of the three of them. It's just a three character movie. I really liked Leslie Manville of the three of them. I thought that she did the least in way of being demonstrative and big scenes and all that. But I felt that she was really perfect in her within the realm that she was asked to operate in. I just thought she was just great.
Oh yeah, she delivers every line so masterfully.
Yeah,
and every scene she's in, she is just the highlight of that scene.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a real shame if she's not nominated.
Yeah, yeah.
It really would be, but there's a chance that she doesn't get nominated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, for actor we have Oldman versus Chalamet. That's basically what it is.
Yeah. So you just mentioned Leslie. So on the supporting actress thing, it seems to be mainly Allison Janney versus Laurie Metcalf. Am I wrong about that? I don't think that Mary J. Blige or Octavia Spencer, I don't think that's happened. Holly Hunter was wonderful in Big Sick, but I don't know if I haven't really heard or felt much of a surge on her part. And I confess I never even saw Girls Trip. What did you think of Tiffany Haddish's performance in that?
I think it is Metcalf versus Allison Janney.
Uh-huh.
I can't see any of the other contenders, even surprising.
Yeah.
Metcalf was brilliant as Lady Bird's mom. She hit every note perfectly. And I'm so happy that she got this kind of comeback.
Yeah, me too. I felt good for her all the way through. Now, it's funny, the most interesting point that you've been making in our chat today is that this performance 10 or 15 years ago would have definitely been the likely winner, but now it's different. And in the same sense, I think that Allison Janney's character, in other words, when you play someone who's horrible, who won't stop smoking black cigarettes, who abuses, who is basically the villain of the piece, you know, far, far and away. But that has a certain cachet. That has a certain fascination. People enjoy people who really go for that. So, you know, she's doing that thing in a really... I mean, I thought, obviously, she was going to be a nominee when I first saw I, Tonya, even though I didn't care for the film at all. But she was going to win. Or be nominated, I should say.
You know, I, Tonya, I remember emailing you right after I saw the screening and telling you this is pretty much... about stereotypical trailer trash, white people, and you know, it has every cliche you can think of, and you know, it's very heavily inspired by Scorsese. Almost every scene has a song. I was not really that impressed by the movie. Margot Robbie was great. She might even get nominated.
I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. I just don't find any feeling of deliverance or levitation from playing that relentlessly dysfunctional, relentlessly angry, ugly, swearing, cigarettes, you know, rage. When I was saying, is this the whole performance? It's going to be on this level all the way through? Answer, yes, it is going to be on this level the whole way through. And I don't find it very enlightening or redeeming to stay with a person on this level, but that's what people are impressed by. She's hammering that ugliness, and they respect that commitment, I guess.
Yeah, the thing about the movie was that no matter how original or stylish it thought it was, it just felt really familiar. I mean, you've seen a movie like this before. And it almost felt by the books.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, Scorsese has done this quite a few times in his career, especially in Goodfellas, which is the movie that this film is most inspired by. And it even felt like a David O. Russell film at times.
Yeah.
You know, there was that O. Russell the camera movements, the music, everything. But I don't know. It's the kind of movie that is elevated by its strong performances, but that's about it.
You know, when you vote for somebody or you feel really taken by a performance in which someone is playing a horrible, odious person, there's always an element, it seems to me, that if you're going to vote for somebody and say, this is one of the best performances of the year, there's always some kind of perverse element of enjoyment that you get out of their, you know, they twirl their mustache, so to speak. There's something going on that even though you don't like them as characters or they're playing reprehensible people, there's still something perversely enjoyable. I really didn't find anything perversely enjoyable in the least about Allison Janney's performance. She just does the venality and the ugliness, unless I'm forgetting something, but she does it very well, I guess is the best I can say for it. It's obviously a strong performance, but I didn't get the slightest bit of enjoyment. Did you? Do you have anything about her, you know, about her mom of Tonya Harding performance that was enjoy? You know, that was fun, that you had a good time with, that you chuckled at?
Yeah. I mean, you know, with that parrot on her shoulder, and I think in the movie she's like, this is my fifth husband, referring to the parrot.
Mm-hmm.
I have to go back to, it's very stereotypical the way that Janney's role was written. There's not much nuance to it. There's not much, steps in. And going back to Margot Robbie and Tonya Harding, I mean, Tonya Harding is beating up her husband throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many times he punches her in the movie, at least like 8 or 9 times.
Yeah.
She always goes to him.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like another, I know it's based on a true story, but that was another part of the movie that I found really just unenjoyable. Mm. You know, I heard many people say that I Tell You is an enjoyable movie, it's fun to watch. It really isn't fun to watch. You know, it's...
I agree.
Yeah, it's about these despicable people,
mm-hmm,
that you are meant to kind of like.
But we're supposed to kind of chuckle at them. The idea is that they're overdoing it. The director's saying, let's broaden this, and let people have a laugh at these people's expense because they're so low rent and so desperate and so crude and coarse, I guess, right?
Yeah, and even that is kind of done in such an obvious and pedantic way that it just didn't work for me. I mean, I remember when we were at TIFF, people were just raving about it, but I think the raves have kind of died down a bit, and
mm-hmm,
it's not even mentioned at all as a Best Picture contender.
Yeah.
What's left now are the performances,
mm-hmm,
and you have Margot Robbie who, if she does get nominated, she squeaks by as the fifth nominee.
Okay.
Right now, it's either her or Jessica Chastain. Correct me if I'm wrong, for that fifth spot.
I don't believe that Jessica Chastain has ever had a prayer of a chance, because her performance is not really that different than Mrs. Sloane. It's very, don't fuck with me, I am brittle, you can't, you think you've got some angle that you're going to, you know, you can't put anything over on me, I'm smarter than you, I'm going to come back at you every time you say something that's, you know, it's just defensive and brittle. And you know, naturally guarded. A person who's in trouble, she's being prosecuted, God help her. But
yeah.
I didn't really feel a lot of humanity, a lot of vulnerability. She just was a combatant in a kind of a gladiatorial arena, if you will.
No, I agree with you. And when I saw Molly's Game at TIFF, it started off really with a great high adrenaline style, then it just started deviating into Sorkin-esque,
mm-hmm,
yapping, and I just grew more and more disinterested in the narrative. I just wanted to walk out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I just toughened it out. But it's not really a movie that I liked in, mm-hmm, any way, shape, or form.
The actress thing is go ahead. I'm sorry.
If you hate Aaron Sorkin, you're going to hate this movie.
You know, I used to be very much in the Aaron Sorkin camp. I don't hate him at all. I think he's, when he's on his game in the right way, he's brilliant. And I love sitting through his films. I just felt that overplayed that rat-a-tat-tat, that aggressive, combative mentality about kind of outsmarting you or outsmarting the audiences. I just couldn't. I felt I couldn't breathe in that movie. You know, I was like getting fatigued very early on, like a half hour in.
Yeah, I could take maybe 90 minutes of it, but then it just got too much. And so basically, we're saying that Margot Robbie is in.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's Margot Robbie, Streep, Streep at the bottom, because I don't think people want Streep to win, but they acknowledge she's quite good. I mean, let's be honest, she's excellent as Katharine Graham. Sally Hawkins, Frances McDormand, and Saoirse. And I think Saoirse is going to take it. Maybe not. Maybe Frances. But it's those five for sure. I definitely not. I've never seen. I mean, Jessica Chastain is being in that group. So, let's get over to supporting actor. Let's get the supporting actor done. This is the thing that's really gotten. It's all along. It's been Defoe has the lead. He's the one to beat, and then Rockwell is the closest competitor. The other three, I mean, it'd been my call. It'd be definitely Michael Stuhlbarg for that wonderful scene at the end of Call Me by Your Name, because that works so well. No other actor has a scene like that. Really, Defoe doesn't have anything at all like that. He's a guy that you like and you care about, and he's got good paternal protective feelings for the kids hanging around the apartment complex, and he's a little nervous about his job, catching cigarettes in the back of the building, that sort of thing. But there's no moment that he really has that one great moment. Sam Rockwell has that moment, kind of, when he kind of crawls out of his resentful anger thing in Ebbing in Three Billboards and becomes Frances McDormand's ally in the third act. That's a moment. But
Yeah.
tell me what it is that has led Armie Hammer, who, again, great, good performance, really liked him. Good work, excellent work in Call Me by Your Name. How did he manage to elbow aside Michael Stuhlbarg in the estimations, I should say, of the blogging mafia? They're all saying that he's the fifth guy, not Stuhlbarg. What happened? I mean, how did that come about? Because he's politicked more, because he's made more appearances? He's done a lot of that. Is that what matters?
I think a few factors play into this. First of all, Armie Hammer has way more screen time than Michael Stuhlbarg.
That's true.
The Stuhlbarg, he appears here and there, and then there's that really, really masterful final scene, which is maybe the scene of the year for me, where he speaks to his son about his own life.
Yeah.
I think, and also, I think with Armie Hammer, every year you were like, okay, this is when he breaks through. This is when he breaks through. I think this is the year finally where he's going to break through. And this is the year where he's going to be a household name. And I just can't see him not being nominated for this.
Army.
He's the Army. He's
Okay.
going to be nominated. And
All right.
I think Stuhlbarg being nominated is basically up to, it'll come down to whether Three Billboards has one nominee or two nominees.
Now, yeah, again, now this is what you're saying is everybody agrees that it's definitely Rockwell, but lately people have been saying that Woody Harrelson, who plays
Yeah.
a lawman, a sheriff of a small town who with cancer, and he has a tragic thing that happens halfway through, and he writes a series of letters to various characters that are very significant. They're kind of moving. They get to people, these letters that he's written after his passing. But where that came from and why he's also in it, I really don't get it. I was thought he was fine, but he wasn't significantly doing anything different than I haven't seen Woody Harrelson do in any number of other films. He's basically has a shtick, a personality, a way of delivering lines, and he did the same thing, and that's great. It's a good role, good film. So,
Yeah,
where did he
good
come
acting
from?
by Woody in Three Billboards.
But how did he
Really
get
good
in? That's what I'm wondering. I say, how did this happen? I mean, where did he get suddenly up into the level that he's one of the five? I don't
acting.
understand.
Yeah. I mean, Three Billboards, Woody Harrelson is in backdrop. When he shows up in a scene, yes, he's great, but nomination worthy, I don't think so. And we all love Woody. He's great. He's fantastic. But, I mean, to not nominate Michael Stolberg would be such a crime. And I think it'll come down to whether Woody Harrelson gets that nomination or not.
Okay.
And I don't know. I mean, right now we'll find out when you. But I mean, I'm thinking. I mean, Stolberg is in my final five. I have Woody Harrelson at number six. I think that's what's going to happen. But you never know. It depends. It depends just how much the voters love Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah.
It really does, because if you love Call Me By Your Name, you're going to nominate Michael Stolberg.
Oh, I know. There's some kind of push, but there's some kind of reluctance out there about Call Me By Your Name. You can feel it everywhere. It has nothing to do with the fact that it's obviously a brilliant, masterful film, that it's one of the best. It's way up there in terms of critical regard. It's like a 98 on the scale, you know, of Metacritic. And yet, somehow, some way, there's a general feeling out there that, well, yeah, but I like the, you know, let's talk about Three Billboards more. It's just not a. There's a built-in prejudice. That's all I can figure. It's a homophobic thing on some level.
Yeah, it's funny. Most people, and I'm talking about this time around. I'm talking about film critics. Most film critics I've spoken to that have not really adored or warmed up to Call Me By Your Name have been millennials.
Huh? Really? That's funny.
I found that a majority of the critics that love that movie are way past their 30s. It's become a very interesting topic of conversation for me whenever
Have you mentioned this age this age gap thing, this age disparity thing? The millennials seem to be less into it, less respectful or admiring of it than older critics. Have you mentioned this to people?
Yeah, and they seem to really, really, really love Dunkirk and Get Out.
Okay.
But I think Call Me By Your Name will do very, very well come nomination time. I think that it is a movie that is pure cinema. It is beautiful to just look at. There's so much substance in the screenplay. It's almost the only perfect movie I've seen this year.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that there is a chance for it to have this kind of boost eventually, and maybe it'll be for the Best Picture prize. I've not lost hope for this movie. It's going to depend on so many factors.
Yeah.
So many. And we're still like a ways away from even the nominations. I mean, we're 2 weeks away, I think, from the nominations.
Yeah, something like that. Somewhere. It's the nominations are always announced in these not the first week, but the second week of Sundance. So
yeah.
they will be announced around the 21st or something like that.
Right. So just like last year. So right. and then after that you have 6 weeks where anything can happen. Like the conversation can easily change. So who knows? But I think the more people see Call Me By Your Name, the more they're going to fall in love with it. Because right now, this is the year where you don't really have a frontrunner. So much so that the de facto frontrunner is Get Out.
Oh, God.
You know, that's the kind of year it's been, where it's just total confusion. You don't know where it's going to go, so who knows? No, even Dunkirk, I mean, I told you, like, 10 years ago, Dunkirk would have probably been the frontrunner. Right now, we just don't know much about Best Picture. We know a lot about actors. an enigma. We don't know what's going on there.
Right.
And I really don't know why. Mm. Is it because people are trying to find a way to politicize the Oscars again this year, and they just can't find a way to politicize it?
Well, we already kind of made that point at the beginning of our chat, which is that it's definitely trying to be politicized, or is being politicized by the younger people in the critical community and on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's big time politicized. But
I mean, imagine the post winning. There's going to be people complaining that it's too late.
Yeah, I could see people complaining, and I would definitely understand that if they say, listen. This is the kind of thing that would have won 10 years ago. You know, this is not part of our world, the Post. It's a Spielberg film, and it's, you know, it's about 1971, and it's fine, but it's, you know, some people have said it's a little smug, and that it's not really a metaphor for what's happening with Trump today, which is, again, an arguable and an intelligent point. You know, so I could see people complaining, sure, and I would understand why. So.
And people have already complained that Dunkirk is too white. So,
oh, wait a minute. You complained. You wanted Chris Nolan to magically bring in a bunch of people of color actors?
Oh, my God.
I mean, how could that have happened?
Because of that.
Yeah. Anyway.
You know, it's the times we live in.
Yeah.
You know, as I said before, critical theory, postmodernism have snuck into film criticism, and it's... It's an interesting time to live in, but you can rest assured Pauline Kael is rolling in her grave right now.
And on that note, all right, we've done about an hour, so let's let it go at this point. Maybe we can talk about 18 next week or sometime.
Yeah.
There's a lot to talk about. 18 is going to be a fairly interesting, more than interesting year. I'm really glad that it looks as good as it does. So.
I saw your list. It's looking good.
Yeah. All right, have a good Sunday, and congratulations on your new apartment. So how much bigger is it, by the way? Is that why you chose it, because it's more space, or what?
It's double the size.
Okay.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Finally, it's so hard to find a nice apartment in Cambridge, because there's so many students, and they just, snatch it up right away. And everything is overpriced. It's ridiculous. Even this place here is slightly overpriced. But it's prime location. We wanted to stay in Cambridge because we love it here. And we found a nice place that was around 3-4 blocks away from our old apartment. So.
Yeah.
All
right. Well, that sounds great. So we'll talk next week, and have a good Sunday.
Yeah, and Happy New Year.
All right, you too.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.